This is the Awful Announcing Podcast.
Three-pointer.
Oh, Huggins! Double honor!
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow! In your life have you seen anything like that?
Oh! LeBron James with no regard for human life!
Welcome to the AA Podcast.
Madden, what are you still doing here?
Here's Matt Yoder.
WWE has made a lot of news in the sports world recently. Brock Lesnar announcing his re-signing with the company on ESPN. SportsCenter showing WrestleMania highlights, and so many websites now covering the industry on a regular basis. With that in mind, I'm really excited to welcome today's guest because he is a must-read for me every week with his best and worst columns over at Up Rocks and with Spandex. Brandon Stroud joins us today. Welcome, Brandon, to the Awful Announcing Podcast.
Thank you very much. It is an honor to be here, and I'm really excited to talk about all of the fake fighting on real TV.
Now, I know you've been writing about pro wrestling on the internet for a while, but for those folks in our audience who may not be as familiar with all your work, tell us how you got started writing about wrestling on the internet, and how has that grown to the point where now you're writing about it almost basically 7 days a week now at UpRocks with an entire vertical dedicated to professional wrestling?
I'm very lucky. I started off like most people. I was 18 in the 90s because I'm ancient. And I started writing on what was called op boards back in the day, where it was just nerds going on message boards and basically being like, we're a website, we have content. And it was weird. And we just write what we thought about wrestling shows or make dumb racist jokes or whatever, and it was weird. But somehow, after years of writing, I helped co-create a comic called The Dugout, which is pretty famous at this point for not existing anymore, with John Boyce of SB Nation and our good friend Nick Dallamora. And that got us a job at AOL for a while. And at AOL, they were like, hey, you like wrestling, right? You should write about wrestling. Tom Herrera, my editor, at the time I worked with Brian Fritz, who's amazing. And I decided, okay, well, I'm just going to write what I think about Raw. And I'm going to take the most basic format I ever could think of and just be like, okay, here's what I liked about Raw and here's what I did. I'm just going to write this every week because it's going to take me 5 minutes and it's going to be a throwaway thing and it's going to be great.
The blogging life in a nutshell, by the way.
Yeah. I wanted to do something where I could make people have to listen to my opinions, but I could also wear my underwear. So basically, yeah, I did that and it snowballed and got more and more popular. And yeah, I ended up getting a job at Up Rocks and bringing it over to With Leather at the time. And yeah, it just sort of became its own thing. We got With Spandex last July. The wrestling stuff, I guess, does well enough on the internet now to justify its own vertical. Like I said, it's really funny. Wrestling and the internet go well together because people who love wrestling and people who love the internet in a certain way are pretty much synonymous.
I've noticed, you know, you mentioned that popularity on the internet. Of course, that goes way back with all the dirt sheets, message boards, you name it. There's this intensity and, you know, the whole internet wrestling community idea. How intense is it when you're writing about pro wrestling? Because I guess I can only relate to covering sports media on a daily basis. And really, I mean, it's not that stressful because you're just talking about ESPN and NBC and all these companies and how they cover sports and sports should be fun and all that. But, you know, people do get worked up about that sometimes. But I know that people get really worked up about pro wrestling and pro wrestling opinions. So how intense is it? I mean, is it a stressful life? Is it just totally a breeze and you get to enjoy, you know, writing all these articles, you know, watching WWE Network all day? What's that daily lifestyle like for you?
You'd think it would be really easy, right? You would think like, okay, I'm watching Brutus Beefcake wrestle and Brutus Beefcake sucks. So I'm just going to make a bunch of jokes about Brutus Beefcake and we're all going to get along. I have gotten so many death threats in my life.
Wow.
I've been getting death threats regularly since like 1998.
Oh my gosh.
Just every day. Just people are just like, oh, hey, I hated your opinion of this Dana Brooke match. And also I'm going to kill you. So it's just like, oh, okay. I think I figured it out though. Wrestling sort of caters to stimulus response, right? Wrestling's all about like, this is going to make you feel a thing and you get to feel it as strongly as you want. And there's nobody here to judge you. Right? Like, that's it. Like, right. That's the hook. It's like guys in their underwear pretending to fight, and you get real pissed about it. Like, that's it. So you take that into wrestling fandom, and you end up treating people who write about wrestling, or even strangers who are just, like, expressing their opinions, you treat them like you might treat a wrestler. Like, you're that person in the crowd who's just like, screw you, Seth Rollins or whatever, except you're like, screw you, regular person living at home just watching wrestling. So in the same way that you might be like, I'm going to kick your ass, you're just like, hey, writer, you don't like wrestling in the exact same way I do? I'm going to kick your ass. So it's real confrontational. It's real stressful. You wouldn't think it would be, but it really, really is.
Yeah, that is amazing. I can't believe that.
Oh, it's nuts, man. It's super crazy.
That blows my mind. I mean, thankfully, you know, the sports media beat seems, you know, like a walk in the park compared to that. Man, that's wild.
That's because it's real, you know? It's like sports have a real consequence to them. Like, wrestling, you can change the history of it. You can just rewrite history, or you can make it go in a certain way that you want. You can change the dynamic. You can change the way it's presented. Like, there's a lot of modification that you can do. In sports, it's just like, here's sports. And there's not really any way to get crazy about it. So,
some of my favorite writing on the internet, Brandon, is your older stuff with the best and worst of Nitro reports from the mid-90s.
That's my favorite thing too.
And I was crying at my computer, just laughing, reading about Halloween Havoc 95 and looking back on that with Hulk Hogan throwing the Giant off of the roof of a building. The Giant not only surviving, but having time to change into his wrestling gear, walk out, have a match. Following that is the appearance of the Yeti. All of this happens in one night. And I remember watching this as a kid and going through this and thinking, wow, this is the most dramatic, coolest thing in the world. And then you're looking back and it's like, oh my God, I can't believe like all of that happened. And not only that, but I digested that and thought that this was like amazing and had this reality to it. When you've got people falling off buildings and surviving and giant ice mummies coming to life.
Himalayan ice mummies, yeah. The best part of that is that you didn't even mention that it started with a monster truck sumo battle.
Well, like, that was the given. That was the given for everyone who's watched Halloween Havoc 95.
A monster truck sumo battle that began when Hulk Hogan got his neck broken twice in the same month. And was still okay to not only drive a monster truck on a roof surrounded by explosives, but his neck was good enough to throw a 7-foot-tall man off of a building to his death, and then wrestle, and then survive a mummy attack.
What are your favorite things when you go back and look at some of these old stuff? What has been your favorite show to review? And what is the one thing that makes you do just a complete and total facepalm? Is there one that stands out good and bad both ways when you look at some of those old Nitros or old Raws or some of the things that you review?
Well, as far as the absurd stuff goes, WCW pay-per-views are always the big thing. Because on Nitro, they would be kind of weird, but it would mostly be grounded in wrestling show. You know, they'd be like, oh, he cheated, or like woman threw hot coffee in someone's face because I guess they serve coffee at wrestling arenas. I don't know, like in like Dixie cups, and the person in the front row at the end of the show has a hot cup of coffee that can be stolen. I don't know, just weird stuff like that. And normally it's just like, oh, here's the thing that doesn't make a lot of sense. And then you get on pay-per-view and it's like, here's a 3-tier cage with like 30 guys in it and there's no idea how you're gonna win the match, or there's a monster truck sumo battle, or, you know, people throwing garbage in the ring. Like, it gets weird. So whenever I get to review a pay-per-view, it's really fun. Which is funny, because I love how stupid wrestling is. That's my favorite part of it. That's why I love shows like Lucha Underground, is because there's so much dumb stuff happening, but in context, you're just, like, allowed to like it. Like, Lucha Underground, the best part of it is that they'll do ridiculous stuff, like have a reincarnated dragon man do nunchucks in a sunset. Or they'll have a pissed-off ninja skeleton who is breaking people's arms so hard that it makes candles blow out, breaking people's arms in a sacrifice to his dark master. It's not even kind of grounded in reality, but they don't, like, wink about it. They're just like, here it is, isn't this cool? And you're like, yeah, it so is. So that's the key, is just avoiding that wink. And when you go back and watch those WCW pay-per-views, man, like, there's so much winking going on and so much wanking going on and anything that sounds gross. Like, there's so much of that going on.
And I guess that's the big question with where pro wrestling is today, because we've been through all these different eras. You know, you went through the NWA of the late 80s, early 90s, and Jim Ross is talking about these guys are the best athletes in sports today, and it's presented as, you know, wins and losses are everything, and it's this, you know, legitimate athletic competition. You go through the NWO, you go through the Attitude Era, and then I think, you know, we had the CM Punk pipe bomb promo. He had everything that happened with that. You thought maybe we're coming into an age where the fourth wall is coming down. The reality era has begun. But I don't know if we really moved into that quite fully. And then, like you mentioned, you have shows of like Lucha Underground that kind of do go back to that pure entertainment model. So I guess, you know, my question is, where are we at just in general in the wrestling industry? Have we moved into that reality era? Are we still kind of embracing it as entertainment? Are we seeing it kind of as a mix of both?
I think the reality era is a really bad marketing tool. I think the reality era is a phrase that WWE was eager to get over because they wanted to justify the fact that everything's kind of boring mm-hmm. and nothing really matters. Like, that's the thing. Like, everybody has, like, a normal name, and everybody's just like, I'm a regular guy, and I'm arrogant. Or, like, I'm a lady with one name, and I'm arrogant.
And then you have guys losing part of their names. That seems to be a growing recent trend.
Neville, of course. The threatening Neville, because, you know, Adrian Neville made it sound so much worse. The thing that you kind of skipped in your jump there is that between the Attitude Era and this reality era, one of the biggest stars in wrestling murdered his family.
Yeah.
So now WWE is very much like, we have to be as safe as possible for as long as possible and make everyone okay. So they're real just delicate about everything. Like, they don't want to offend anybody. They don't want to upset anybody. If they push somebody that the crowd doesn't like, they back off of it. Like, it's very much like, everything's okay, guys. I promise it's okay. And what's happening is that it's stagnant, you know? It's stale, kind of. And it's entertaining because wrestling is entertaining. And you can have bad wrestling, and it's still pretty good because it's wrestling. And that's causing everything that isn't WWE to sort of just rise up. Like, there's so much awesome wrestling happening right now, whether it's on the independents. Shout out to Inspire Pro Wrestling, whether it is Lucha Underground. I mean, even WWE's developmental territory is incredible right now because it's not being like WWE. It's being its own thing. It's being Triple H's E-Fed, basically, where he's like fantasy booking these like NWA storylines with characters that matter and good athletes and making people seem important. And it's not really that safe. So that's it. It's just WWE's just real careful. Like, they want to be on SportsCenter, but they don't want to piss anybody on SportsCenter off, mm-hmm. you know? They don't want to do the Mike Tyson, like, I'm Mike Tyson and I'm kind of a criminal and I'm going to shove Stone Cold Steve Austin and everybody's giving each other the fingers. And, like, that was dangerous feeling, you know? And that was the difference, is that now they can't do danger because danger causes stockholders to be concerned.
Yeah.
And it's just... fans get offended because we're in that weird age of outrage anyway with social media where every person who has an opinion has to make the important opinion and be like, well, here's what I think about it. Mm-hmm. So you have to avoid that. You just have to make sure nobody thinks anything and they keep giving you their money.
That's really the goal of any business, I think, in 2015.
Right,
these days. Exactly. All right, you mentioned SportsCenter, and that's why we wanted to have you on, is to talk about this rise recently in kind of the mainstream sports coverage given to WWE. How surprised were you that Brock Lesnar went on SportsCenter to reveal to the world that he was staying with WWE? How surprised were you to see this was the first time I could really ever remember it, just in a pure wrestling sense without any, you know, guest athletes or what have you, that Steve Levy is calling the highlights of the main event at WrestleMania, like his game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, he's narrating like Seth Rollins doing the curb stomp and winning the title and all this stuff. I mean, did that kind of blow you away to see all that? And how do you explain that sudden rise in interest here from the mainstream sports world?
Well, WrestleMania always gets a little bit of that. WWE is really great at the idea of wrestler, more so the idea of wrestling than actual wrestler. WWE has the ability to say, hey guys, remember wrestling? Remember that thing you liked at some point during your life? Because a lot of people liked wrestling at some point during their life, whether it was in college or whether it was as a kid or whether they're long-term fans or whatever. Like, it's like eating mom's cooking sometimes. You're just like, even if it's crappy, like, it's still your mom, right? So that's wrestling. You're like, oh, that's a comfortable thing that I remember. It's like watching an old cartoon or hearing a song that you haven't heard in ages. Like, I heard Angel Eyes in a gas station once, and I was just like, this is amazing, and it's Angel Eyes. It's not that good of a song. And that's wrestling. So they have the ability to be like, hey, mainstream organizations, remember wrestling? And a lot of people, like TMZ or you know, people at SportsCenter, like, they grew up watching wrestling, or there's some wrestling fan there somewhere. And it just kind of translated into like, yeah, let's do a wrestling thing. That's cool.
I wonder, Brandon, if that's the thought behind, like, you know, UpRocks, Sports Illustrated, Deadspin, Grantland, USA Today, blogs like ours. I mean, you're seeing so many more of these sites giving WWE more coverage. I mean, we're all over WWE Network. SI's doing a weekly Raw recap. And you're seeing, I mean, Fox Sports is hiring Jim Ross, for crying out loud. And I wonder if that, the reasoning behind that is that you have so many people that work at these sports outlets now that blog about sports and what have you, that at one point or another were wrestling fans or still follow the product or still like and say, hey, there's a natural crossover between sports fans and pro wrestling fans. So why not try to serve them with this content and bring over some of those folks and either keep them there or bring in a new audience that might not usually come for the sports stuff, but might come for that, you know, passionate wrestling audience that follows it wherever it goes online.
Yeah, I'll give you two things in regard to that. One, UpRock started covering wrestling because I'm a huge dork and I made them. I was like, they were like, write about sports, Brandon. You like sports, right? And I was like, yeah, but I also want to write about the Nexus, you know? And then I would just do it and they'd be like, ugh. And then eventually got enough traffic that they were like, okay, we're going to put you over here in a corner, write about wrestling. It's fine. Mm-hmm. So that's why they did it. I'm just going to take credit for that. The other thing is, it's easy to remember the last time that wrestling was hugely popular was in the late 90s, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the popularity came from people who were in high school or college in the 90s. And those people are now like in their mid 30s and they're sort of like rising to the tops of their businesses. So those people who were like real into it with their friends at some point, like they're the adults now. They're the ones taking over. And they're the ones running sites and they're the ones, you know, running businesses. So those people, I can tell you honestly that I've made so many weird friends, people of note, like famous people, whatever, have told me like, oh yeah, I read your column all the time because I need to find like intelligent content about wrestling because I'm a smart person and I like it. So wrestling has sort of stopped becoming a thing that dumb people love and started becoming a thing that everyone sort of fondly remembers again. And I don't know if that's going to cause a boom period again because wrestling's so safe. But it certainly made it a thing that's okay to talk about. So when you see a post on Sports Illustrated that's about wrestling, it's like, okay, that's the wrestling post. And it's not that huge of a deal. I certainly think that more voices sort of speaking out about wrestling can help it. I think that if enough like intelligent people or thoughtful people or people with a conscience, you know, speak up and say, oh, well, this might not be right or this might not be good. Like if enough important people can do it, if Sports Illustrated can do it, and if, you know, you guys can do it, and if UpRocks can do it, like eventually they listen because they want to make sure we're all okay. So I think now's a really good time to affect change. And yeah, it's interesting. there's more wrestling stuff popping up every week. There's a goods and bads of Raw and hits and misses of Raw popping up everywhere. So good for them.
Competition, hopefully, you know, the rising tides lift all ships or something like that. Something in that too, Brandon, I wonder just to kind of extrapolate on that point is a lot of these wrestling fans that you see now covering the industry who are older, I think one of my questions is it's a PG product. It's not really marketed to that mature fan anymore. Do you sense that there might be a disconnect and maybe some of the things that maybe some of the older fans that write about it, that cover about it, that know what's going on, that are really in tune with it, that they see some of the things that there's a disconnect with, do they have to kind of maybe swallow some of the things that happen and say, you know, the product's really not marketed towards us. It's marketed to the kids that are always wearing the John Cena shirts and want to see his five moves of doom and all of that stuff. I mean, do you sense some creative tension there with where a lot of these fans are that have grown up with it and where the current product is with the PG era?
I do. I think, honestly, that's what NXT is. I think NXT is the offering to the niche fans like that because NXT doesn't seem like it's marketed to babies. You know, it seems like it's just a good wrestling show. And WWE produces that. WWE makes that and creates that with intent. So, of course, they're doing it on purpose. It's a different product for a different kind of person. One of the things that made shows like Nitro really good in the 90s is that it was the three-ring circuits. You know, there was something for everyone. It's like if you came for the acrobats, then you might not like the clowns, but if you came for the clowns, you might not like the acrobats, that kind of thing. And WWE is just dividing that up. They're like, okay, well, if you like seeing wrestlers who you recognize and basic stimulus response, watch Raw. If you want a really good wrestling show with like fun characters with like consistent motivations, watch NXT. If you care about like their relationships and who's hot, watch Total Divas, you know? If you care about the old stuff, buy WWE Network. Like, they're creating like a network of, well, not a network, but like a system of just different aspects of wrestling to make all of the wrestling fans come to one thing, because they're essentially the only game in town. So I think that's an interesting point. I also don't mind WWE being marketed to kids, because I think they realized at some point that if they didn't renew the resources, that they were going to go out of business.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's sort of like how comic books, when you were a kid, were marketed to kids. And then when you got older, comic books stopped selling to kids. They started selling to like older people. So the demographic shifted, and now it's this weird just cluster of like, are we for kids? Like, why is Superman cursing? Like, why are like characters being raped? Like, what's going on? Like, why is Spider-Man like killing his wife with radioactive ejaculate? Like, weird stuff like that. So I think WWE was like, well, we need to spend like 10 years making sure these kids stay with us for life, because these fans aren't going to do it. So, you know, these kids who are growing up right now loving John Cena, like in 20 years might make another attitude era, you know? They might say, well, I want to come back to wrestling, but I want something better. So I think they're creating a nest egg, kind of. And I think that the safety of WWE and all of this like different variety that they're creating is all in an effort to just like build their foundation, you know, just make sure that another Benoit thing doesn't happen and another Owen Hart thing doesn't happen, and that they can just be as safe as possible and live forever.
You mentioned WWE Network, all the different offerings that are on there, and we'll get to NXT in a bit. But as someone who's really keyed into the wrestling industry, how significant is that network for the future of WWE, and for really beyond that, for the entire industry? And how much of a bet was it for that company to say, you know what, we're going to throw the traditional business model out the window, we're going to give up pay-per-view, give up all of that revenue, all that income, and go with this completely new streaming model where you could just pay $10 a month, watch the pay-per-view, watch almost the entire tape library, new stuff. I mean, there's so much there, that WWE Network, but is it such a risk that, you know, if it fails to keep all these subscribers, if it fails to grow, that WWE is really betting their future on this succeeding?
Yeah, at first I thought it was a real dramatic thing, but I think they sort of understand that technology is in a weird place right now, you know? Mm-hmm. It's the same way that social media works, where, you know, we were all on MySpace, and then we were all on Facebook, and then we were all on Twitter, and it navigates. It's like media travels now. And there's no guarantee that anything that we're doing right now is going to be here in 5 years. Like, there could be a new technological advancement and we're all off the internet and we're on some other connected thing. Like, there's no way to know. It's all just absurd. So I think WWE saw Hulu and Netflix and were like, well, we could do that, or we could just have our own thing. So I don't even know if it matters for the future. I think it matters for right now. I don't think hedging any bets on the technology of the future is the way to go. I think just playing it as safely as possible and just being like, okay, well, we have all this stuff, let's just put it out there and see if someone will give us money for it. Because you've got like a world-class championship wrestling tape library, and you're selling like a DVD of it, or you can just be like, give us $10 every month and watch it.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you're a fan, to be able to watch, I mean, you know, old stuff from Dallas with the Von Erichs and the Freebirds, you could watch Attitude Era. I mean, you can watch anything. So I couldn't see how, if you're a fan, you couldn't subscribe to that and think you're getting an amazing deal with it. What is your favorite era promotion? What's your favorite thing to go back on WWE Network and watch?
Well, Nitro. I mean, I love Nitro. Nitro was my jam. It's a terrible show and a great show at the same time. I'm really disappointed that they haven't added the episodes after 1996 yet. Especially since I review them, and I'm in like April of 1996, so I've got some time, but I'm really stressed out that they're not going to add the rest of it. Like, the network's going to fail or something, and I'm just going to lose this again.
Well, let's see if we can get all of the Twitter followers together to get a campaign. Bring more Nitro to WWE Network. There's got to be a hashtag or something.
There's got to be. I love that. I grew up in the Horseman Country. I grew up in the 80s watching the NWA. I lived 40 minutes from the Greensboro Coliseum, So I used to go to shows as a little kid. I went to shows in the womb. I was at Starcade 85. This is how long I've been doing this. It's really sad. And so I love going back and watching those. Bob Caudle's voice makes me happy. It makes me feel like a happy person.
As it should for everyone, really, Brandon. As it should for everyone.
I can't do a good Bob Caudle impression either. Like, I do some pretty good impressions, but I can't do his voice, but it's so special to me. I have this, like, weird group of special voices from my childhood. Him, the guy that did the voice of Pac-Man on the Pac-Man cartoon. I just love those voices. And
probably the only time you'll hear those two compared in such a way. That's my guess.
But yeah, they don't add a lot of the stuff that I want to watch. Like, they don't add the late Nitros. They don't add early NXT, like Full Sail NXT or the game show seasons of NXT or Florida Championship Wrestling, where all this started. I would love to see that stuff on the network because that's what I love watching. I love things that feel fresh, and WWE's gotten to the point where it's very, very, very predictable. It's like watching an episode of Full House, and going back and watching shows like Nitro just feels so different. So anything that feels different is what I want to watch.
You mentioned the predictability of WWE, and that's a good way to segue into the current product. We saw this rise, all this momentum with WrestleMania, all the mainstream coverage, Brock Lesnar. Now he's kind of out of the picture again, taking his annual sabbatical. Seth Rollins is there as champ. Do you think WWE has done enough to capitalize on that momentum in the last month? How would you rate just generally where Raw, where SmackDown, where that main WWE roster and program is at the moment?
I think
that says it all. Just a general,
No, I don't think it's any good at all. I think WWE did a good job of establishing WrestleMania as a thing that's important to everyone, right? And they also established the Raw after WrestleMania as an important thing for wrestling fans. So they've got those two things in their arsenal. But I think that they're leaning on them too much because the build to WrestleMania was god-awful. And right now, you've essentially got the build to WrestleMania bookending a fantastic WrestleMania. WrestleMania was great. Like, it was mind-blowingly good. And the night after was really fun, too, because you got Lesnar killing everyone. You got Adrian Neville showing up. You got Kalisto showing up. It was just this – it felt fresh again. And then now you've got the WWE champion, like, losing non-title matches on SmackDown. And you're just like, oh, okay, it's back to this crap. Like, when Brock's gone, it's just – it's nothing. Brock is the only important wrestler. He's the only one that matters.
I guess –
which is why he's on SportsCenter, because he's the only one that matters. They could all be on SportsCenter if they mattered.
I guess the only solace is as long as they don't build a Survivor Series 2014.
Holy God. They're still gonna. Like, Eric Rowan shows up and I'm just like, oh Jesus, don't do it. Don't do it.
That's a really good point, though, because when you watch these shows, and especially that Raw after WrestleMania, it does seem like that Brock Lesnar is the only important guy. So that really is, to me, the biggest issue facing WWE now. And I wonder if it's, you know, some of it's because they've depended on part-timers for so long, because they failed to build any real new stars. But it seems like he's the only guy. Can there be someone that is working now? We'll leave John Cena aside just because he's been the standard for so long. I don't think he's changing really anytime soon. Is there someone that can make that leap and become that important guy, whether it's alongside Lesnar or in his absence?
I'm in the minority opinion. I feel like you can make anybody into that. I think that the effort put into creative would make anything work. I think they have the best production people in the world. I think they have the best talent in the world. I think they've got the best developmental system. They've got a performance center set up. They've got network contacts. They've got everything you need to make pro wrestling the best, most exciting, most important thing in the fake sports world, you know? Like, that's it. Like, you can do it. WWE has everything that they need to make everything matter and make everything good. They just don't feel the same way I do. I feel like they've always been kind of ashamed that they're a wrestling show. I know Vince McMahon has always been, he's always been like, oh, we tell stories, we make movies. And he's never been okay with the fact that he inherited a wrestling company from his dad. Like, it's a wrestling show. That's it. And wrestling can be a very special, beautiful thing if you take the time and the effort and you put it into it. And I hear so many stories of guys who work for creative coming up with just brilliant new ideas that are fresh and topical, like on trend, whatever like phrase you want to use. and they just take it to the show and they're like, yeah, we're going to do it. And then an hour before the show, Vince just shows up and it's just like, nope, we're not going to do this. And that's just it. That's the experience of working and trying to create for the WWE. So it's basically at the whim of one weird old dude.
So I guess that's really the question is, yeah. is Vince McMahon? I mean, this guy who's built this empire, I guess he was a billionaire before the stock price kind of took a tumble, but is he out of touch to run a wrestling program in 2015? I mean, especially when you look at the comparison between Raw and NXT, you kind of see that progressive show down there. You see things that fans are gravitating to. You see good stories, good wrestlers. It seems like it's got the total package there, and yet it's just a totally different atmosphere and vibe. I mean, sometimes it's better to read the jokes in the column and the Raw reports afterwards than actually watching the show.
It's not good for me because I have to watch the show to write the jokes.
But yeah, Someone's got to do it. Someone's got to do it.
Here's the answer. Who the hell am I to say that Vince McMahon doesn't know how to run a wrestling show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the guy has been better at running a wrestling show than anyone who's ever lived. Like, the guy made $1 billion running a wrestling show. Like, I can't say that he's out of touch or that he's wrong or that he needs to go. I am nobody. At the same time, as a fan, I would really like to see it change. And the truth is that if Vince is around, it's not going to change. So I, as a fan, would desperately love something new. I don't care what it is. I just want Raw and SmackDown to be different. I don't care if they're worse. I just want to see them be different than what I've been given since, like, 2003. You know? Or worse, since 2007, when shit hit the fan. I want it to change. And I feel like Vince is very set in his ways, or he believes that he understands things in a way that modern society might not. I feel that he's out of touch in the way that any, like, legacy businessman is out of touch, you know? Like, he's in it to make money and to increase fame for himself and his company, and he's doing a great job of that, you know? They're doing really well, and the show sucks, but they're doing well financially, right? So what can you say? Like, it's not in touch with what wrestling fans want, but it's cultivating a new kind of wrestling fan. It's creating the kind of people where if you go to a live WWE show and you're sitting in the crowd and you yell something, because that's what you do at wrestling shows, if you just yell something and it's not a thing that everyone is used to yelling at the time when they're supposed to yell it, everyone just sort of turns and looks at you. It's like a Children of the Corn thing. It's like a Invasion of the Body Snatchers thing where they're just like, why did you speak out of turn? Like, we have to say what at the end of sentences. And we have to say what's up when R-Truth asks us what's up. And we have to put up our lights when Bray Wyatt's talking. And we have to do this. And we have to do that. We have to say this at this time. And that's what's happened. They've created just it's almost like a game of Mario Paint. We're just like, okay, if you put the cow right here and you play the music, it makes a moo noise. Well, that's WWE.
And the fans seem like, I mean, if you're just watching, you can sense that they feel like now they are part of the show and that they can almost dictate things.
Right. That creates just the worst sense of entitlement. Because especially if you're on the internet, there are two schools of thought. There is everything's wrong and I'm a pessimist and I don't love anything and everything's terrible. Or it's everything's fine. And those people who talk about wrestling are just like smarks and they don't know what they're talking about. And it's this weird, like, picking sides. Like, you can't just be like, we all love wrestling and let's enjoy it on our own. Like, you have to pick a side. You either have to be the good fan or the bad fan, and everyone thinks they're the good fan and thinks everyone else is the bad fan. Like, there's no sense of community at all.
This is so just every sports debate, basically, in a nutshell.
Right. So when people are like, the IWC, it's like, that's not real. Like, everyone who likes wrestling is the internet wrestling community because we all have the internet. It's not like there are some nerds on, like, IRC in, like, 1995 talking about, like, Mid-South, you know? Like, this is the world. Like, we're all on the internet, and we all think a thing, and we all can't agree on anything because we're all just super pissed off at everything. We can't enjoy anything. We can't hate anything because any extreme emotion in any regard is seen as crazy. Like, you're wrong. And wrestling has always been built around crazy responses.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wrestling is, like, yelling and screaming and cheering and crying and throwing garbage and, like, stabbing Freddie Blassie.
Yeah, and, that's just what I'm going to say. You know, at least no one's getting stabbed anymore, like the 70s or
right. 60s. So. But that was real, man. That was organic. That was like, we're going to pay our money because we want to stab a dude. Like, it was real. And it mattered. It was like, it was tangible. Like, it wasn't this, like, manufactured thing where you just can't speak out of turn. And it's really frustrating because the internet has turned into those live WWE events. If you say something that doesn't sit well with the audience you're speaking to, you're going to be thrown into the garbage. You're going to be, wait, what's wrong with you? And that's why people like me who have like a regular column, like I'll write, and I've been writing long enough that I have some like-minded people who read my stuff. That turns into people who dislike my writing, not just being like, I don't like your column. They're like, you're creating a hive mind. You want everyone to think what you think. And it's so weird. Like, who gives a crap what people think about wrestling? Like, I'm writing what I think about it, but, like, if you don't agree that that Sheamus-Cesaro match from Night of Champions was really good, who cares? You know? Like, just like it or don't, or just think stuff. I don't know. It's so crazy. It's like you're basically begging an audience to not think for itself.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, the obvious example of all of this that we're talking about is Roman Reigns at the Royal Rumble. And I think, you know, what happened with Batista the year before, I think obviously inspired a yes. lot of people. But the whole amazing, ironic thing in this is who was the last guy in there with Batista in 2013? It was Roman Reigns.
And everyone
wanted to see him win. Instead of Batista, a year later, he becomes that guy, and it really is, you know, that guy.
Yeah.
Where is he at now? I mean, does he just need to go through a cooling off period so he can kind of be built up slowly again? Is he the next guy in line now since he didn't get the belt at WrestleMania? Can he win back some of those fans over? I mean, it just seems like he's in such a weird spot right now.
Right. He's a bad conversation. That's how I describe it. It's very difficult to talk to anyone about Roman Reigns. The truth of wrestling is that context matters. The reason that we loved Roman Reigns and the reason that we thought he was a cool, handsome prince is because he had the context of being the third guy and the coolest thing in wrestling. Like, they built up the Shield as the coolest people on the show. They were good at wrestling. They were friends. They had interesting personalities. Like, every time you saw them, you knew that part of the show was going to be entertaining. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't this like second guessing. There wasn't this like, oh, we're going to do this. And what happened is when they decided to build up Roman Reigns as a single star, they completely changed his narrative. Like, he was this like cool, silent guy who was basically like the exclamation point at the end of a match. Like, the Shield would wrestle and Ambrose and Rollins would do the heavy lifting. And then when it was time to win the match, Roman Reigns would come in and just run into dudes. And it was great because he was like the battering ram. He was like the giants. Charging the wall in Game of Thrones. Like, he's the guy that you're like, okay, time to break the gate. You know, that was him. And he was cool as shit because he was this guy who was just like, even in promos, they would talk and then he'd be like, believe that. And you'd be like, yeah, you know? And now he's this like weird, just creepy guy with like misty, foggy contacts who still pretends he's in the Shield. He's still got the gear and he's still got the music. But, like, his friends aren't there and there's no context. And he's, like, reading nursery rhymes and he's basically just acting like Sheamus. It's super weird. And how do you like that? There's so many guys like that already. John Cena's like that. Dolph Ziggler's like that every time he tries to act like a babyface. Sheamus is like that. These guys who just sound like they're reading from a teleprompter. They're just like, I'm the hero now. And you can't ever cheer for that guy because he's such a prick. Like, WWE's interpretation of the main hero is the worst character on the show.
Which is so probably an issue for a show that needs to create heroes to root for.
Right. And that's the difference in NXT is you go down to NXT and you've got Sami Zayn, who is the most compelling character in wrestling because he's a human being. He reacts to things like a person might. When he gets mad and yells at William Regal, he realizes that he's yelling at his boss and he apologizes. And it doesn't make him look like a wimp or anything. It just makes him look like a person with, like, a heart. And when he, you know, is put into a situation where he's like, should I cheat and do what everybody tells me I should do to beat Adrian Neville for the NXT title? Or should I take the high road like I believe I should? The answer is that he takes the high road. And that would never happen on Raw. On Raw, Sheamus steals Alberto Del Rio's car and eats burritos because Del Rio's Mexican, and then shits Mexican food into the Mexican guy's car, and he's the good guy. John Cena is the good guy against the Nexus and comes out and is like, you're gay, you're gay, you're gay, you look like the Wendy's girl, you're gay.
Be a hero, he's the good guy. Be a hero.
Right. It's so absurd. Like, it's just, it's catering to children, and children are bad people. Children have to look at the show and find themselves. And since you can't have wrestling children, you have to have wrestlers that act like children. So you have to have these just petulant, like, fussy, complainy guys who get whatever they want. Because that's what a child wants to live vicariously through. They want to see a guy who gets told no by his parents and is like, shut up, I'm going to do it anyway. And that's all these authority stories. Is mom and dad, Stephanie McMahon and Triple H, show up and they're like, no, John Cena, you can't have what you want. And John Cena goes, shut up, you're a bitch, I'm going to get whatever I want. And then he gets it. Because it's the story of a child succeeding.
I think we've basically articulated all of professional wrestling in just three words. Children are evil. And, yes. And that really does explain it all. I think we've opened up a window into the soul of professional wrestling.
I'm happy to have helped do that.
With, you know, The Shield was awesome, and they had such a great run of success. And that's why you look at where WWE is now and where they were a year ago. I mean, you had Daniel Bryan coming off of his big moment at WrestleMania. Who knows what's in his future? You had The Shield. You had the Wyatt family. You had all of these seemingly new stars, great matches every week. But it seems like over the last 12 months, a lot of that good vibe is gone, aside from maybe Seth Rollins. I mean, he's obviously been great and catapulted to the top spot, but you had the Royal Rumble debacle with Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan hurt, CM Punk gone. What is there to get excited about with the current product right now? Where is that Shield right now, or that Wyatt family right now, that can say, you know what, this is why we want to tune in, this is what we want to see?
Come on. I wish there was an answer, man. NXT, that's the answer. Like, that's the only thing. And that doesn't even count. Like, Rollins is really good at his job. And you can watch him and be like, he's really good at his job. But he's not someone you're supposed to cheer for. Like, you need someone like that succeeding who you can cheer for. And they don't have it. Daniel Bryan is probably the best wrestler of the last 20 years. And he is just not going to make it anymore. Like, he is broken, and it's not his fault. Like, it's just he's done. Like, he needs to calm down and just be a beloved former character or something. I don't want to see that guy die. And, you know, it's just, I want there to be that. I feel like anyone could be that. Like, I've gotten to the point where, especially if you read my columns, like, you know, like, my favorite people are the crappiest mid-carders. Like, I love Heath Slater, and I love Bo Dallas. And I get excited when, like, David Otunga's on screen. And, like, right now, like, the primetime players. Like, I just want to see those guys. I don't want to see anyone. And that's really sad because I love wrestling with my entire heart. And, like, nobody on Raw makes me happy anymore. Except Brock Lesnar. Like, Brock Lesnar shows up and I'm just like, yeah, kill him. He's the only one. And now, he's not a good guy.
Now, he's not going to be back until SummerSlam, basically. No. So it's going to be a long summer, basically, is what we're saying here. Especially for you, Brandon.
Yeah, and the truth of it, man, just to not sound pessimistic, the truth of it is that Monday everything could change, you know? Monday they could just be like, here's a good show, and we would love it. And then if they did like five or six good shows in a row, we'd be like, everything's better. Despite like 50 years of garbage, right? Like, despite 50 years of them like showing us that they're never going to maintain a good show, and it's always going to wane. It's always going to get good and then bad and then good and then bad and good and bad. We're going to trick ourselves into being like, it's fixed now. And Cesaro's going to get a push.
that would solve everything, I think, for a lot of people.
I know.
All right, let's move then to the good stuff. Let's move to your happy zone, which is NXT, which started out as this developmental minor league promotion with the sole goal of getting people up to the main roster. And now it has really developed into its own universe, and it really, maybe you can make the argument, the best thing going in the entire industry today. So how was it that NXT was able to grow to this point where now maybe, you know, you're thinking NXT could go on tour, it could maybe turn into this own little mini promotion within a promotion that could finally maybe compete with Raw and SmackDown, where WWE can build that competitor that they've needed for so long as something that comes from inside its own house.
Here's the answer, and I wish this was a more complex answer. WWE can make a great wrestling show if they want to. With NXT, they made a great wrestling show, and people liked it. That's the answer. Like, they just did a good job. Like, they just didn't sell it out. They just have it try to be a good show. And there's an effort behind it. Like, these people have a hunger, you know? Like, these are people who want to be successful TV millionaires, and they're not yet. So these people are fighting for this. When they go out, they're trying hard. Like, Sasha Banks is killing it every week because she wants it. Like, she's trying hard. She gives a crap, you know? She wants it. And guys on Raw, like, have been doing this forever, you know? Like, there's not, like, a hunger in John Cena. And he's, like, a super billionaire. Like, he's the top wrestler of ever or whatever. And just, there's not, like, a hunger because he's already there. He's been there for 10 years, you know? Like, you don't stay hungry. Like, Derek Jeter didn't give a crap about baseball for at least, like, 11 years. Right? Like, at least. He's just like, I'm going to bat 270. It's fine. You know, that's it. And that's John Cena. It's not that he's bad. He's the captain. It's just, you know, he's not, like, it's the difference in Billy Joel in the 70s and Billy Joel in the 90s. Like, or Elvis Costello before Diana Krall and after Diana Krall. Like, that's it. It's the same thing that happens to musicians, the same thing that happens to artists. Like, once you've hit the top of the mountain, there's nothing compelling you to make that mountain taller. You're there, and you made it, so it's time to relax and enjoy it.
Well,
Raw is just a bunch of guys who got to the top of the mountain and relaxed and enjoyed it. Big Show, Kane, all those guys. Like, they've been doing this forever, and they just, who cares?
In any industry, any walk of life, I mean, you've got to keep evolving. You've got to keep changing. You've got to keep reinventing yourself to keep up with times, to be different, to not grow stale. And I think maybe that is one of the great things about NXT is that it seems like it's progressive. It seems like it's evolving. It seems like a wrestling show in 2015 for fans that like wrestling. Who are the guys? And you mentioned you know, Sami Zayn earlier, you've mentioned Sasha Banks. Who are some of the performers that you're really drawn to in NXT that make that show so great?
Well, they're all really obvious answers, so I feel like I'm not being hipster enough. Like, I want to be like, Wesley Blake, but no. You know, Bayley. Bayley is a pure babyface. She's came up from Shimmer. Like, she's got, like, an actual wrestling pedigree. She's been doing it for a while. Like, she's a compelling character. She's nice. It's the reason people like Parks and Recreation is because the characters act nice to each other. They're not just, like, sarcastic assholes. It's not King of Queens, you know? They're just like, oh, we like each other, and we're going to be friendly and funny. Like, that's Bayley. Sami Zayn is, of course, probably the best wrestler in the world right now. Sasha Banks is next level. She's so good. I watched her wrestle Charlotte in San Jose at the WrestleMania NXT show. And it was so good. And I don't think I can ever explain that to people. I wish that I could make every person who likes wrestling have a moment where they could be in that NXT crowd in San Jose. That was like a life-changing thing for me. And it sounds really exaggerated, like I'm being hyperbolic, but it's been a long time since I've been in a wrestling crowd, and it felt like we were all just really excited to be there, you know? Especially since I've tried to get into the wrestling business a little, and I help run a promotion in Austin. So I'm very infrequently in a crowd where everyone's just real hyped. And in San Jose, it was 5,000 people losing their minds from the beginning of the show to the end of the show because we all loved it. And we all wanted to be there. And we wanted to see our favorites. And we wanted to see Tyler Breeze. And we wanted to see Hideo Itami do a go to sleep. And he did it. And we wanted to see guys who were just killing it and trying hard and being important and being fresh and fun. And they delivered. And it's a real thing that happens. Like, WWE made that. WWE's not doing a bad job. WWE's doing the job they want to do. And the job they're doing on Raw and SmackDown isn't something that's easy to enjoy if you're not stupid or a baby. So NXT sort of gives you that, like, fire. It gives you that passion. It lets you feel good about something. And it's not perfect. It's still got a lot of WWE's problems. It's the middle point between an indie show and a WWE show. So it's it's interesting. There are so many guys on that show that I love, though. Enzo Amore is probably the best talker that's come along in ages. The guy says Fugazi, and it's just amazing. He just says words, and you're just like, yeah. Like Kalisto is super exciting. I love Tyler Breeze. Tyler Breeze, this like weird asexual model character. There's so much. Like Adrian Neville was the ace of that company before he became what is he now? Like a Power Ranger? Like what is he? He's like a Skyrim character. I don't know what he is. He's from outer space, I think, because gravity forgot him and there's not gravity in space. Maybe that's the explanation.
Makes you wonder how he would breathe in without any of that oxygen. And
sure.
You have to be careful if you go down that rabbit hole too deep, right. I think. But yeah, I mean, NXT, I think, is the one thing a lot of fans who are tuned in, I mean, that's really the saving grace right now. And that to me is the most interesting thing about the business now, is that when you look at just the wide scope of WWE, they can offer that to the fans that write about it every week, that know what's going on, that are involved, that want the wrestling, and then they can serve the PG, you know, younger audience what they want to serve. So it's amazing to see that the same company can just offer two totally separate things and have it all operate under one roof. It's really compelling to see. And I guess that's what's maybe to me most interesting, is see how does NXT continue to evolve? Does it maybe grow into a mini promotion of its own? Does it go on tour? Does it do live shows? Or does it kind of stay in that cocoon where, you know, the top priority is getting guys ready to go up to the main show? Where do you see NXT going in the next maybe year, 2 years?
Well, as a fan, I want it to kind of stay what it is, you know? And that's selfish, because those performers need to make more money and they need to be popular. I feel like if NXT can maintain what it is, maintain its identity and maintain its sort of mission statement and not just become a rehashed version of Raw, I think that's going to be really special. That's a thing that could truly be, as you mentioned, like it's a brand split that happened organically.
Yeah.
And I think that's really crucial. And WWE creating its own competition is a fun idea, but at the end of the day, they're not going to take the consequences of competition. If NXT becomes more popular than Raw, they're not going to let that happen. They're going to be very controlling of it. And I'm just hoping that this coincides with Triple H sort of taking over. And I hope that when Triple H does take over, that Stephanie doesn't necessarily take over to the point that it stops being true. Like, that guy loves wrestling. And he loves wrestling in the way that nerds like wrestling. He's just too large and famous to it. Like, that guy grew up loving Ric Flair and Harley Race. Like, he loved the, like, workhorse heels, you know? Like, that's that guy. He just
doesn't look like the rest of us.
No, he just has to play that character because that's who he is. But in his heart, he is the smarkiest smart that ever smarked.
That's really like, saying something.
He's making a damn E-Fed in Florida where he's like, yeah, we're going to have Kenta, and we're going to have Kevin Steen, we're going to have Prince Devitt, and we're going to wrestle, and we're going to have Snoop Dogg's cousin. You know, like, what he does. He's like Ric Flair's daughter. Like, he's just making an E-Fed. He's like, well, here's a model character, and here's, like, the fat guy who dresses like Taz and pretends he's Bam Bam Bigelow, and you know, here's like the like gay dubstep cowboy team. Like, he's just like, here's what we're doing, we're gonna have all this stuff and it's gonna be fun and cool. And he's basically realizing that he can't run Raw and SmackDown, so he's just like, well, I'm gonna take this thing I can't control that nobody's paying attention to and make it my own thing. Vince McMahon's first NXT show was that San Jose show, his first one. And that's so dumb because it's been around since 2010. FCW was around so much longer before that. And that's where all this came from. And that dude's never checked it out. Like, I know he's busy, but like, you probably got a minute to like watch a tape of NXT, right?
Especially since he owned the thing.
And you would think that if you're in charge of all of the ideas that get a guy over when he's on the main show, you would do a little bit of research on what was getting them over already. You know, and that's the disconnect. There's such a huge disconnect between NXT and Raw. And that's why all of these NXT guys are floundering, is because they're basically starting over.
Yeah.
They earn a spot and work for years to be one thing, and then they start over. And it's not fair, really.
Yeah. All right, let's end about 10 minutes or so with some rapid-fire questions. And really, this is just an excuse for us to ask just totally random questions that aren't neatly segued together.
Okay, I'll try not to ramble forever and make it go another half hour.
All right, so this being the Awful Announcing Podcast, we have to ask you about your take on the current slate of WWE announcers, which probably could take about a half an hour. So just briefly, who are your best and worst announcers in WWE at the moment?
I'm a big fan of Rich Brennan on NXT.
Actually calls moves, which is a plus, I think, that maybe you don't see.
He does. I appreciate that. I hated Corey Graves as a wrestler, but I really like him as a color commentary guy. I like the idea of keeping Rich Brennan and Corey Graves as a two-man booth. I wish they called everything. When it comes to the actual announcers on the actual shows, I don't have a single nice thing to say about any of them. The only thing nice I can say is that it's really fun to go to Lucha Underground shows and watch Alberto El Patron wrestle. And every time he goes for that kick, yelling, "That's the kick that won him a championship, Maggle." And it's super fun. Aside from that, I don't have anything nice to say about them except for Michael Cole died the night after WrestleMania, and that was fun, and then he just no-sold it.
Kind of like the Giant. I mean, that was his Halloween Havoc 95 moment. It's just, you know, Brock Lesnar, vicious attack, miraculous Michael Cole recovery. I mean, the guy is undefeated at WrestleMania, so maybe we should give him a little bit of credit.
Nothing hurts wrestling more than the announcers. They are the worst thing about wrestling, period. There's nothing good about them. They are all awful and they're ruining the show and they don't care and they don't try and they bury stuff that the wrestlers are trying to get over. And it's pathetic and it's the one thing that needs to be changed and it's infuriating.
For everyone that thinks Brandon is not positive enough, I mean, come on, how could you not listen to that and see the positivity and optimism?
So sorry.
All right,
they're really bad. I can't like pretend they're not. They're really bad. There's a lot in wrestling where like I'm wrong and I'm just being an asshole, but like they're really bad. They're hurting the show.
All right, you mentioned Bob Caudle earlier. So favorite announce team of all time. So let's go. You know, any era, any booth. Would it be Bob Caudle, Jim Ross, Gorilla Bobby? Would it be Mongo McMichael and any incarnation of Nitro? Favorite announcer.
Let me tell you something, baby. You're going to have rocks in your head if you don't watch Nitro. I loved Pepe McMichael. He's my favorite. Favorite announcer team of all time, despite being an NWA kid, is Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura.
Oh, really? Jesse the Body. Throwing a curveball there.
Yes. Gorilla Bobby gives you more of like a heartwarming memory, but Jesse Ventura is the best heel announcer of all time because he was such a butthole. But he was also right a lot of the time. And when you're a kid, you're like, he's so mean. But then when you grow up and you listen to him, you're like, he's totally right. And I love Jesse. I think Jesse was incredible. His WCW stuff wasn't as good, but Gorilla Jesse is just a perfect combination.
All right. So, we've had some good laughs so far. So favorite wrestling blooper of all time?
It's not super cool to say anymore, but the Shockmaster.
Oh yeah, that has to be the one. I mean, that has to be the one.
My feeling on that is I, like a lot of people are like, hey, remember this thing? But it's like, I've been a wrestling fan my whole life, so I watched all this stuff. And when the Shockmaster happened, I was watching that show with my dad, and my great memory of the Shockmaster is my dad losing his mind laughing. He thought it was the funniest thing in the world. And my dad was always, he would get into the wrestling shows, but like he would be kind of detached and I'd never really be able to like remember his responses, but I will never forget him laughing until he was in tears at the Shockmaster. So that's my personal favorite wrestling blooper. I love it and I hold it in my heart.
Favorite match that is available on WWE Network for fans to go watch?
Oh boy, that's a difficult question. Holy crap. Oh God. Lex Luger and Sting versus the Steiner Brothers. That's a really good one. I guess I'll just go to Wrestle War 92 in total. the War Games, the Dangerous Alliance versus Sting Squadron. That's the best WCW match of all time. So the main event of Wrestle War 92.
Next first-time World Heavyweight Champion in WWE?
Ooh. Wow.
We have a notoriously tough rapid fire segment, Brandon.
I just want to say Alex Riley, just to make it. He's got so much rage. He fights and he claws every single day. Next first time champion, I hope it's Dean Ambrose. I don't think it's gonna be, but I hope it is. I want it to be Cesaro. I want Cesaro to come back from the dead and be the next champion, but Ambrose probably. I feel like they're going to salvage Ambrose at some point.
What's the one feud in the last year you think WWE really dropped the ball on? Something that could have been big but kind of flamed out?
The Miz versus Damian Sandow. They took the hottest thing in the world and turned it into this weird thing where they blew it off in a pre-show battle royal that neither of them won. And then Damian Sandow, who was trying to get out of the Miz's shadow and broke away from the Miz, continued to dress like the Miz and do all of the Miz's moves without all of the funny stuff that made him a hit. And then he fought the Miz for the rights to the Miz's own name. And then kissed the Miz's co-star from a movie against her will to the point that it made her want to be his girlfriend. And then she followed him around for a few weeks just so she could then turn on him in a match involving the Miz brand that she had nothing to do with. And now he's just this guy who sucks and doesn't have an identity and doesn't do anything and has no heat. And the Miz is leaving to film a movie and doesn't get anything out of it.
When you explain it like that, it's so hard to imagine that there are people that look down upon wrestling fans for following this.
Yeah, it's real bad. They could have done that. Oh, Goldust and Stardust. That's another one. Iowa didn't like the Fastlane match, so they were just like, let's scrap everything. So that was bad. My personal connection to Goldust leads me to know a lot of things that were supposed to happen that makes me really super sad. So, yeah, that was going to be cool, and they didn't do anything.
What is the one match in WWE you never want to see again? And conversely, the dream WWE matchup we haven't seen yet?
Oh boy. Kane versus anybody. Kane versus John Cena, Kane versus Ryback. Those are the two big ones. Big Show versus anybody. God. But no, Kane versus John Cena, probably. Like, that match sucks. And I don't understand why they keep doing it. It's just John Cena getting beaten up and then hitting an attitude adjustment, and it's just like, okay, burp. As far as a match that I want to see, maybe like a really good Sami Zayn Seth Rollins match, like where Sami Zayn is allowed to sort of be himself. Like maybe Seth Rollins goes to NXT and challenges him or something, and they get like a 25-minute thing. That would be super good because Rollins is the best heel right now, and Zayn is the best face. I think it would matter. I think it would be fun. And, you know, Rollins being the first NXT champion, maybe Sami gets the belt back from Kevin Owens. Maybe that's what we would do. I would love to see that.
If there's one show outside WWE that you recommend wrestling fans watch, which one should it be and why? I know you're going to say TNA, right?
Yes, TNA Impact Wrestling. A show where the points are made up and nothing matters. Lucha Underground, obviously. Lucha Underground is the best wrestling show on TV, I think, right now, because it takes all of the stupidity and exaggerated emotion and, like, honor and goofiness of American wrestling and mixes it with all the just, like, hilarious justice of Lucha Libre, and it's just perfect. It's the only show where the people are... That and NXT are the only shows where people are trying, I feel like. Like, on TV, at least.
All right, finally, we'll get you out of here with this one. Sure. One bold prediction for the rest of WWE in 2015?
Bold prediction?
It's got to be a bold one. It can't be an easy one. Like, you know, Brock Lesnar comes back, suplexes a bunch of dudes. I mean, that, you know, it's got to be something a little bit out there. Not too far out there, just a little bit out there. So that when we come back to this and it actually happens, it'd be something that you can, you know, link to on Twitter and say, hey, I called this.
Okay. I'm going to say that Roman Reigns won't be in the company by next year's WrestleMania.
That's a bold one. That's a bold one for sure.
What? I think he's going to get so pissed off at all of this, he's going to, like, take a break.
Wow.
I don't actually think that, but that's my bold prediction.
And then you can have even more bad conversations about Roman Reigns and why he's gone and if he'll ever come back. And
well, yeah, like, my actual answer is Eric Rowan's not going to be employed by next year, but that's not that bold.
That is funny, though, because I feel so bad for Eric Rowan. I mean, every time the poor guy comes out and his music hits, I mean, you could literally hear children whispering to their parents in the audience that they have to go to the bathroom. I mean, it is that dead silent.
Mm-hmm. It's like you're walking into, like, a folk concert. Because you hear that music and it sounds like something that, like, an opening act for Mumford & Sons would be playing. But, like, the people are only there to see Mumford & Sons, so they don't care.
Poor guy. That's an appropriate note to end on. We'll get it. If I had, you know, any technological savvy, we'd get Eric Rowan's theme music playing on the end of this, and maybe we'll go back through and we'll just end the podcast with Eric Rowan's theme music playing as a triumphant exit for our great guest, Brandon Stroud, one of the funniest, best writers out there on the internet, especially if you're just a casual WWE fan. You gotta go check out his stuff over at uprocks.com, over at the Whip Spandex Vertical. Brandon, a pleasure. Thanks for joining us and geeking out for an hour. Appreciate the time. Hopefully we'll get to do it again sometime.
Of course. Next time, I'm just going to be super optimistic and you're going to love it.
Thanks, Brandon.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you.